In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Andy Babiu began as a bass player in Rochester, New York's Chesterfield Kings in the late 1970s. Now, the band went on hiatus in 2009. They returned after 15 years with a new studio album called We're Still All the Same, and that saw Andy taking on the role of frontman, singing lead and playing guitar. 2025 saw the release of their compilation Loose Ends, 1989 to 2004, rare B-sides and unreleased, and is home to our recent coolest song in the world, a version of the holiday classic White Christmas. We'll hear that now, and afterwards, I'll be back with Andy for your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Mighty Manfred here with you in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and my guest for today's Boxing Day edition of your coolest conversations is musician, producer, and author Andy Babiu. He fronts a long-running Rochester, New York band, the Chesterfield Kings, and their holiday coolest song in the world, a version of the classic White Christmas. That's from their rarities compilation, Loose Ends, 1989 to 2004, rare B-sides and unreleased. Happy Boxing Day to you, Andy.
Well, happy Boxing Day to you as well, Manfred.
Now, tell me, did Santa linger long around your Christmas tree and lighten his bag appropriately last night?
I think so. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, what did you get? What did you get for Christmas?
A piece of coal.
Oh, I can't believe. Well, what did you give?
Oh, I gave a lot. But, you know, my wife usually takes care of that. I just see the credit card bill.
Well, then, in that sense, you're very giving, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, I seem to remember some story, and you'll let me know if this is right. Somehow you have some Ukrainian ancestry or something like
yes.
that. Is that right? You're right.
Both my parents came from Ukraine during World War II.
Okay. So when you were growing up, like Christmases in your household, were there any like Ukrainian traditions that your family kept?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My dad used to... Oh, the best memory was my dad would make this thing called mead, which was honey, and like he'd boil it and it put tons of like vodka in it, and like you'd do shots of it, and it was great. And as a little kid, I used to, you know, we used to sneak in and drink it and stuff. So that was a high point. And then, of course, a lot of Ukrainian food and stuff. I grew up with all that stuff.
Like with the Germans. You know, my mother is German, and every year we would be sent this package from my grandparents over there. And they had these cookies that would only be on sale at Christmas time, Lebkuchen. And now, like at Trader Joe's, they have those same things there. But it was just that one time of the year, just around Christmas, would they be available. Was there anything that was any Ukrainian dish or pastry or something that was just only unique to Christmas time?
Yeah, well, there was quite a few things, you know, traditional Ukrainian dishes that I grew up with. Like, not just one or two. It was a lot of things. And my mom used to make all that stuff. And then the other thing was we'd get, like, Christmas carolers. it or not, that would show up to the door. And they'd come in and sing like these, like old men and ladies would come in and sing like Ukrainian Christmas carols, which was, you know, it was a Ukrainian community in Rochester. And we just kind of grew up with that. So, yeah, Christmas was very Ukrainian at my house growing up.
And now in your household, I mean, do you put up a Christmas tree each year?
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and kids love all that stuff. And
so is it a real tree or is it an artificial tree?
I think at this point we do an artificial. We did a real one for years, but all this stuff falls off it. It's a pain in the butt. So my wife's like, let's just get, yeah. I think it changes all the time. We've got white ones. We got green ones.
That's cool. So for me, as I mentioned, my mother was German, and she didn't do this when we were little kids, but later on she would put real candles on the tree.
Oh, wow.
And set those on fire. And of course, my father never very happy with that. So Ukrainians, do they ever have this potential fire hazard going on?
I think traditionally years ago they did, but my parents never really, I think a lot of the times my parents had one of those silver trees with the spinning, you know,
the color wheel.
Yeah. The color wheel. And they a little bit later, they used to get real trees, but never candles. That's pretty dangerous.
I'm glad you mentioned the silver one, because those are looking really cool. You know, that's got great sort of mid-century mod kind of feel to them. So I know you've done several Christmas songs over the years. There's a version, you guys do a version of Run Rudolph Run, your tune, Hey Santa Claus, we're going to listen to in a couple of minutes as we go out. And then this week's coolest song in the world, your version of White Christmas. Have you done any other Christmas songs, or was that it?
Well, with my other band, The Empty Hearts, we did a Christmas record too. We did Christmas Time, which was an original, and then we did a Bo Diddley one on the flip side.
Well, I think the Christmas Time, that is on this new Wicked Cool Records, like a digital Christmas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool song. We had the Bangles sing the backup vocals on it.
And how did you rope the Bangles into that?
Well, we were in Los Angeles recording it, and we needed a high vocal part. And I think Clemmer Elliott said, hey, let's call up the Bangles. And so, you know, you just call up the Bangles and all of a sudden they're singing on the record.
Oh, that's very cool. And let's remind our listeners, The Empty Hearts, that was yourself and Wally Palmer from the
Romantics
and Elliot Easton from the Cars and Clem Burke.
Yep.
From Blondie. Very cool. So what is the story then on your recording of White Christmas? Why did you guys do it, a version of the Irving Berlin?
So it was kind of a funny story. It was the middle of the summer. It was like August. And I get a phone call from little Steven. And I was literally like laying by the pool with my kids. My kids were swimming. They were young at the time. And, you know, I'm just laying around in the sun in the pool. And I get a phone call from little Steven. What are you doing? I'm sitting by a pool. I need you to write a Christmas song. I go, what? Yeah, I need a Christmas song. I got a friend making a little movie. I need a Christmas song. And I'm like, about what? He goes, I don't know. Mention Santa Claus or Christmas trees or something. Make it sound like Chuck Berry. And then he like got me off the phone. I'm like, what? And then he called me back. He goes, record White Christmas too. And I'm like, when do you need it by? This was like a Friday, right? And he goes, I need it Monday. As little Steven does. We got together and wrote the song and then recorded it over the weekend, mixed it really quick.
What year is this, by the way? This is like 2003, 2004?
Yeah, somewhere around there, before that film came out. So,
And the film is Christmas with the Cranks, is that it?
Yeah, and so it was like the summer before it came out, before that Christmas season. So we did it and sent it to him, and we kind of didn't hear anything. We didn't hear if it was good, if it was bad. And we were preparing to go on a tour with the Cramps for a month.
Oh, wow.
We were more concentrated on that. We figured, let's just do it. Steven asked us to do it. We sent it to him. And, you know, sometimes those things don't happen. And so we just like, so we did the tour with the Cramps. And as that was finishing, I think it was like November or something, we started seeing advertisements for this film with, you know, Tim Allen and Dan Aykroyd and Jamie Lee Curtis, is Christmas movie, you know? And I'm like, wouldn't that be funny if it was like in something like that? He said, nah, he said it was some small movie his friend was making or something like, eh. Next thing you know, Stephen calls me up. He goes, "Hey, we're going to use that song Christmas Time in that film." I go, "What film is it?" And he said, "Christmas with the Cranks." I go, "Oh, wow, that's kind of big." I said, "What about the other song?" He goes, "Yeah, we're not going to use that. We'll use this one instead. It's better." Yeah, I'm fine. So it never came out. So, you know, obviously they used the one song in Christmas with the Cranks. And then White Christmas never came out. So we put it on that rarities thing.
You've got the White Christmas. It's on the new the compilation, the rarities compilation. Why put this thing out? What prompted you to gather this stuff now and put it out?
Well, there was a whole segment of Chesterfield Kings stuff that wasn't available. It was when we left Mirror Records, we started doing putting stuff out ourselves on Living Eye Records, our own record label, which we started when we put our first couple singles out, 2-3 singles or whatever it was. And so we decided to put stuff out. And also through the years, we had been asked to do a lot of recordings for weird, you know, like compilations of Pretty Things or Kinks or, you know, the different tribute things and just weird stuff. And we did it. We did one single where we did The Liars, She Pays the Rent. There was two different singles. We used to play with Mono Man a lot, you know, with The Liars, and we're good friends. And so he always liked She Told Me Lies. Babuki, I really love that keyboard part you came up with. He named his bird after me. Babuki called it the Babuki bird. I could never, every time I saw him, he'd always tell me about his Babuki bird. Anyhow, he always liked that song. So we decided to do a single where we do each other's song on the, but it was only a single and it came and went and like, you can't get it anywhere. So we made a deal with Wicked Cool and they re-released all that stuff. And then there was a whole crap load of just weird stuff that weren't singles. They weren't records. They were just like weird things that we did. And this song was one of them. It just never came out.
Well, I wanted to ask you, there's one of those things on there. I was looking up your version of Hey Joe and Roadrunner and looking at a, you know, sometimes these discographies online aren't that clear. So got to ask you about it. What is the Paisley Zipper Band?
It was when we were leaving Mirror Records, we worked at that place and it was kind of an awkward thing. And we just wanted to put out a record, and Get Hip had asked us to put out a record on their label. And we kind of couldn't do it as the Chesterfield Kings. So we just did it as the Paisley Zipper Band. And just to see if people liked it or not. And it confused the shit out of everybody. So it's another one of those things that came and went, you know. They probably printed 1,000 of them or something, or a couple thousand, who knows, you know?
And so was there some Kinks compilation, some Kinks tribute album that you contributed, like Ruby, Won't You Please Go Home? Or,
yeah, we did two songs for it. It was something out of England. And obviously we're huge Kinks fans. And, you know, we know Ray, we used to hang out with them when they'd come to Rochester and stuff. And, love the Kinks. And so when somebody asked us to do a song for a Kinks compilation, we ended up doing two. We did Rosie and Live Life.
Yeah. Both of them sound great. And there's one other song I wanted to ask you about, the song, the rarities thing. So you guys did that surf instrumental record, Surf and Rampage. And then one of the tracks on the rarities thing is Muscle Beach Party.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you do, Muscle Beach Party? The theme, you know, the title song, the Muscle Beach Party. Then I should say, Muscle Beach Party, the American International Pictures beach movie, Frankie and Annette. That's what we're talking about here.
Love that stuff, you know.
So you love that stuff. So why did you do it?
Well, I mean, I always loved surf music since I was a kid, and I've told you this before, I just recently took up surfing. So that's how much I love surfing and surf music, but we had been doing, I think it was maybe the Don't Open Till Doomsday or whatever the album after that was. We had gone to Europe and we were touring in Europe. And everybody always, as you know, you do interviews while you're there. And they always ask you, what will you be doing next? You know, and then we'd say, oh, we're going to do a surf album. And everybody assumed it was going to be like an instrumental record. And we said, no, we're going to do like a vocal record. Now, Manfred, we were going around bragging about that without ever trying it, right? And you're a vocalist, so you know.
Yeah.
We get back off this tour, we get in the studio, let's learn these songs, and we'll like go in there. And we all learned them, and we show up. And we go to sing it, and it sounded like a train wreck. It was like, oh my God, it was horrible. So we literally had to put our instruments down and learn how to sing a cappella, like learn how to, like, I mean, because it's multiple part harmonies and stuff. It was, we had never experienced that. So once we got into doing Surf and Rampage, we got really into it, and we figured we're not just going to do, 14 song record. I think at the time CDs were brand new, like the concept of CDs, and we figured out you could fit about 30 songs on a CD. So we figured we'd fill it because we'll never do another surf record. And it was around that time that somebody in Europe or somewhere asked us to do, was it Mondo Bizarro or some kind of weird compilation album that they were doing. Friends of ours owned a label or something. And we said, yeah, we'll do that. And I think this was like a spinoff of that record. It was a leftover or something.
Well, I love what you're going into this and describing the background is that so often nowadays when the term surf music is bandied about, it's immediately thought of as being instrumental music. And people forget, you know, they know the Beach Boys, but they don't even necessarily think of the Beach Boys as a surf band going forward, you know, a couple of early hits, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's great because there's all that stuff, all that vocal stuff, whether it's Jan and Dean or.
Oh, yeah. The Fantastic Baggies, all that stuff, you know. I mean,
all that cool stuff. So, you know, we were talking about what you do for Christmas next week. We've got another holiday coming up. Any plans for New Year's Eve?
Get to the next year.
Well, you seem like a very resolute man.
Yeah.
Mr. Andy Babu, do you have any proper resolutions for this 2026?
Well, we're going to record a new album. So we're just finishing up the songs now, and we'll record a new album in the new year, and we'll go back out and play.
Okay, new album in the new year, Ed Stasium. Is he going to have anything to do with that?
Ed's going to produce it, yeah.
Oh, great. And where's it going to take? Where are you going to record it? Up there at your place
in
Rochester?
Yeah, my studio here in Rochester. I got a big recording studio here. That's where we did a lot of the Chesterfield Kings records, and we did the two Empty Hearts albums here too.
Oh, wow. Very cool. And can you, for people that are looking to this online, can you describe your where you are right now?
Right now, I'm sitting at my office desk at my guitar store, Fab Gear in Rochester, New York. So if you see some cool guitars back here.
Is that right over your right shoulder or to the right of your right shoulder? Is that a Bo Diddley thing? Looks like a Bo Diddley.
Oh, yeah. You got to have a Bo Diddley guitar, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why not, right?
Absolutely.
We had the pleasure to be able to play with Bo Diddley a couple times in Washington. So we backed him up, which
was wow, okay.
And then we play with him a couple times here in Rochester too. We backed him up, and it's great because like you don't practice; he just turns around and said, "This one in A," and then like you just play. It was great. We'd get him to play all kinds of songs that you know he never played. You know?
Oh no, that's way cool. So who was Mike playing drums when you did that?
Yeah, and it was weird because the first time he didn't want us to play the Bo Diddley beat because he felt that no one knows how to do it the correct way. And we had a long, that's the only thing that he talked about before going on stage. Where's the drummer? And like, okay, no Bo Diddley beat. Just play straight 4/4. And I'm like, what? And so after like he left the dressing room, he went someplace else. We looked at each other and said, no way, we're just going to play what we do. We know how to do it. We're students of Bo Diddley. So, and for the first part of like the first song, he like was turning around, giving a dirty look. And then all of a sudden he realized we could do the right thing. Then he liked it. Then he liked us. So somewhere there's a video of us in Rochester playing with them. I think you look on YouTube, there's a video of us playing.
Oh, wow. So I saw him, you know, a number of times over the years and, the first time I saw him, he was playing in Athens, Georgia, and there was the Michael Guthrie Band was backing him. Do you remember those guys at all?
No.
Michael Guthrie Band?
No.
The two brothers, Michael and Herb, and they would have been like army brats in Germany. Their father was stationed over there, so they grew up there. And so they would see the Beatles in Hamburg, right? Mm. They heard the word on the street, and so as teenagers, they went and saw the Beatles playing there. And anyway, they came back and around the D.C. area, they were very active and put out some independent records. And in any event, they were in Athens, Georgia at this time, and they backed him, and Herb was the drummer. And part of it, I couldn't figure out if part of the shtick was, Bo's shtick was to kick the drummer off the drums, and then he would start.
Oh, no. Every time we played with him, he'd get on the drums. It was part of the shtick. Yeah. That was great. The one thing, the first time I met Bo, like at the 930 Club in Washington, you probably played there, the old one with the pole in the middle of the stage.
Yeah.
They'd have two shows. They'd have the early evening show, and then they had the late evening show where they clear the house, right? So in between the two shows, we went to the dressing room, and he had a bunch of his buddies from the Washington area come back there. And he started telling me about his throat. He ordered a bottle of Grand Marnier, and he says, would you like a shot of this? At that point, I had never drank Grand Marnier. And he goes, let me teach you how to drink Grand Marnier. We drank a whole bottle of Grand Marnier. So I could say to this day, Bo Diddley taught me how to drink Grand Marnier.
And it was medicinal, really. It was
had a whole long story on how, if you're a singer, Grand Marnier is the best thing for your throat. So remember that, Manfred. Like, we're after about four shows in a row, go get a bottle of Grand Marnier. And you could say, Bo Diddley told you so.
That's right. I will. And when they ask me what I'm doing, I will say, the spirit of Bo Diddley has invoked this.
That's right.
And I'll have to do it. So you mentioned, we were talking about Christmas with the Cranks and White Christmas, and you were told to record a couple of songs. Now, the other song was Hey Santa Claus, which you guys wrote the weekend. I want to go out with that tune. So you literally got together that weekend and just started banding about things and started off with a list of whether we put Christmas trees in here or Santa Claus.
We literally wrote the song in 15 minutes. And in hindsight, listening back to it, it kind of sounds like it too. But, you know, you do those things, you don't really take it seriously because 90% of the time they don't use it. You know, we kind of did it thinking nothing of it. And we never pursued it until Steven called me and said, oh, it's going to be used in this film. Like, wow, that's cool. And to this day, it's great because that film is shown all over the world in different languages and stuff. So the BMI checks are always cool. They roll in the summer after.
Oh, yes. All right. Well, Andy, I want to thank you for speaking with me on today's Coolest Conversations, our final one of 2025.
Thanks, Manfred. Always good talking to you, man.
Yeah, and have a great New Year's Eve, and I look forward to seeing you next year in the big 2026.
Sounds great, man. We'll see you then.
All right, it's Hey Santa Claus from the Chesterfield Kings and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Those were the Chesterfield Kings here in Little Steven's Underground Garage for the holiday tune, Hey Santa Claus. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's leader, Andy Babiuk, for talking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Finland's Michael Monroe, former lead singer of Hanoi Rocks, will have a new album out in February titled Outer Stellar. However, he's got some new singles out from it already, and we'll talk about those and the upcoming release on your next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.